What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game, and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan, Nick Keezer, joined this week by the one and only Willie Donick, Predators television voice, my co-host on D-Maze Vingan and Donick every weekday from 11 to 2. Willie, how are you?
I'm doing well. Great to be back on the show.
Keezer played a clip before the show of you interviewing David Legwand in 1999. And I was like, what's the purpose of this clip? And he says, that's Willie interviewing David Legwand. And I said, that's absolutely not Willie. It sounded like someone doing a Willie Donick impression, or Willie Donick, a young Willie Donick, putting on a broadcasting voice. I was shocked to learn that was you from almost 30 years ago.
Well, it was October of 99?
We're going to have to play this now, but let's hear your explanation.
It was David Legwand's first NHL goal, and he was, I think, probably 19 years old at the time. So we both sound a lot younger than I think we sound now. I still maintain that this recording is not quite on the actual speed. It sounds a little bit sped up to me. Nick Keezer is adamantly in denial of this. Maybe I'm in denial is what it comes down to.
Keezer, play the beginning of the clip.
Let's see if we can go down to the Predators locker room here in just a moment. We will talk to one of the stars of the game, David Legwand, who was just outstanding tonight. He had his first NHL goal and his first NHL assist, and he is on the line with us. David, congratulations on a tremendous victory tonight. Hey, David, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Hey, David, congratulations on a great victory tonight.
Thanks. It's nice to get one and one under our belt and coming back home for two more games here, so hopefully we can get a couple more. And it was nice to come in here and steal 2 points here.
See, that didn't sound like you.
You don't. Why? That doesn't sound like me?
It sounded like you putting on a broadcasting voice. You hadn't found your broadcasting sea legs yet, I suppose. You have a much more grizzled voice these days now that you have plenty of practice. The reason why that clip is relevant is Roman Josi just passed David Legwand as the all-time games played leader in Predators history. Roman Josi at 957, David Legwand at 956. But I just wanted everybody to hear that. A trip down memory lane with Willie Donick to start the show. So, the Predators had won 5 games in a row. They seem to be picking up some momentum, and just as quickly, that momentum is gone. They have lost 5 consecutive games in regulation, the most recent, a 5-2 loss to the Ottawa Senators on Monday evening at Bridgestone Arena. I want to continue a conversation, Willie, that we had on our show yesterday with Derek Mason about Andrew Brunett specifically. So, on the surface, and I emphasize that part, on the surface, the Predators have a 530 points percentage under Andrew Brunette. That ranks 20th in the NHL since the start of last season. You see a team that has started slow in each of these 2 seasons. The Predators made up for it last season by going on a franchise record point streak that helped them get into the playoffs. It does not appear that that is going to happen this season. And it's led to a lot of conversation about Andrew Brunette, whether he's the right guy for this job, and whether he needs to make some adjustments to the way the Predators play in order to find success. So on this show, Willie, we can dig a little bit deeper into the underlying numbers. As a whole this season, per game, the Predators are 15th in shot quality on offense, but they are near the bottom of the league in shot quality allowed on defense. They're 26th. The offensive numbers have improved over the course of the season, so although 15th is right in the middle of the league, at the beginning of the season, it was near the bottom. They've made strides in that area, I would say, and I think you would agree with me. But defensively, it has been an issue for most of the season. Just in terms of the defensive play, I'm not including goaltending in this. That's a separate conversation. But as a whole, when you look at the work that Andrew Burnett has done, do you see any reason for him to make adjustments to his system in order for this Predators team to reach the expectations that we all have for them?
I think this is a good central question, really, of where to go from here. And when you say 15th in shot quality, I think it's important to also point out that 15th has not equated into 15th in actual goals for, right? They have not finished. They have not converted or executed on that shot quality. And that's why they still are towards the bottom of the league in goals for. So you put all of that together, that's how they are sitting there at 43 points at this stage of the season. Not great defensive coverage, improving shot quality, but not great results other than that one stretch of 10-12 games where they got hot, and not elite goaltending to make up for anything else along those lines. So that's really it in a nutshell. I would say about the system, Adam, there's a lot of systems. I don't even know if there's a lot, but there's several ways that you can go about it. You know, whether you want to play a little bit more of an offensive system, whether you want to play a little more defensive system, zone coverage, man coverage, there's a certain amount of ways. They all can work if you have the right players and if you execute every night. So there's nothing wrong with Andrew Burnett's system. I think the question is, does this group of players, or when you envision this group next year, what it's going to look like, is it a fit of Andrew Burnett's system? And I would also say that for a coach like Andrew Burnett, who is a fairly young head coach, this is the first time really his stuff hasn't worked, right? He has been a real innovator, and when he's taken the reins of a team, boom, it has fallen into line. So this is a learning experience for him, for it to not go well the way it has this year. And hopefully you learn from it and you become a better coach in the long term for it.
By the way, to go back to the shot quality on offense, there is a roughly 31-goal gap between the number of goals the Predators have scored and the number of goals they are expected to have scored. Based on the quality, that's the worst differential in the NHL.
Right, and so we can spend all day, all night talking about how much of that is puck luck, and would that change next year? Is it this they're running up against hot goalies, or are they just not making the play when it's time to make the play? I would say it's a combination of all three, but I think in the latter one, I saw a team last year who was confident that when it was time to make the play, whether it was a first-line guy or a fourth-line guy, they had enough mojo and confidence, and they were converting on those shots. And they had their shot quality, in all honesty, was higher too. They were more top 10 in that and not 15th. But this year, I don't see a team that's got a lot of swagger and mojo. So I do think that affects your confidence when it is time, and you've got that small window, and that's what we've learned about this game since that interview I did with David Legwand. You learn a lot about how it works, right? And some years, everything's going, right? Everything goes in for certain players, and other years, they can't buy a goal, and they go 30, 40, 50 games, and I don't know how they have the mental toughness to sustain it. I equate it sometimes to baseball because it can weigh on you mentally. I do think that's happened to this team.
I just remember that Florida Panthers team that Andrew Burnett took over from Joe Quenneville a few years ago. I believe Quenneville coached the first 7 games. He resigned. Andrew Brunette came in, coached the remaining 75 games. That Panthers team, I believe, averaged more than 4 goals per game at the end of the season. They were one of the best, if not the best, team off the rush in terms of generating offense off the rush. And when the Predators hired Andrew Brunette, I thought to myself, hey, if he can bring that type of play here, that would be great. I haven't seen a team that's excelled off the rush under Andrew Brunette, but you also have to think, you talk about personnel, right, Willie? You also have to think about the players that Brunette had in Florida. He had Jonathan Huberdeau in his final season with the Panthers. I believe that was his final season with the Panthers. He was a 100-point player. You had Alexander Barkov. You had Sam Reinhart. You had Carter Verhaeghe. You know, perhaps that team was better suited for that up-and-down style of play. But I feel like it's a chicken or the egg kind of thing when we talk about personnel versus system. And we talked about this yesterday. Is it that Barry Trotz isn't getting the right players for Brunette? Or is Brunette just unable to make it work with the players that Barry Trotz is bringing in? But I thought that Derek yesterday, Willie, made a really interesting point that I think a lot of Predators fans probably share, which is if you're asking Andrew Brunette to tweak his system, why have him even be the coach? I thought that that was an interesting question from Derek. He used the example of a football coach. If you're asking me to change my scheme so much that it doesn't look like the scheme that got me here, why even have me coach the team? Which I think is something that Predators fans might be wondering.
And that, I think, is a great philosophical question for Barry Trotz, is do I tweak my personnel decisions back towards how Andrew Brunette's system looks when it's humming? Because I would say that last year, even though they didn't have great success off the rush, they generated a ton of rush chances last year. They're not generating nearly as many this year with this group. And they don't look as quick. They're not playing as quick. It's not always how fast can you skate. It's can you play fast. It is and Andrew Brunette has said it many times, it's a demanding system to play. And I do think when the team has been fatigued, that has really shown up. And the last 2 games would be examples. I would say, Adam, from about mid-December up until Saturday in Pittsburgh, they were, the vast majority of the night, winning the shot quality battle. It had really started to work itself out, and I think you were starting to see what the Andrew Brunette system is supposed to look like, what it was supposed to look like for this team. Unfortunately, they didn't win all those games. They had a lot of games where they won the analytical battle, but for the reasons we said before, not converting, not making the winning play, key mistake at the wrong time, a bad line change or something like that, they're coming up a goal short. They have no margin for error. And then when you have a sag like they've had in the last 2 games and they've just been flat out outplayed, which is going to happen sometimes, then you're kind of reminded of, okay, where are we in the big picture here? It's not happening this year. Barry Trotz has pretty much come to that conclusion. What do we do? And this is really, I think, the central question. It's not as much of do you have good players. I think they have good players. And I'm not that concerned that they're going to all age out next year. They are in a lot of key positions, a little older. But I think there's enough there for a winning team if you can have a bounce back. The key is, what tweaks do you make?
That is a good question, which we will answer on the other side, because I saw an interesting mock trade proposal involving a prominent Predators player that I would like to discuss with Willie. We'll also hear what Barry Trotz had to say about his trade deadline plans with during his interview, with Jared Stillman on Tuesday. We'll do that next. Adam Vingan in with Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Yeah, I think in our situation, it's probably be closer to the trade deadline. It'll probably be closer to the trade deadline. From that point, when we make that move at the trade deadline, some of those names may be included. I think the Four Nations has done that. moved up the trade deadline. But we need players to play from, you know, now to the end of the year. So we'll be probably more towards the trade deadline. We don't have any big, big pieces that people are going to do a rant and type of trade with you.
That was Barry Trotz with Jared Stillman on Tuesday on Stillman & Company. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Mingan joined by Willie Donick this week. A lot of trade activity around the NHL, as Barry mentioned in that clip. The Four Nations face-off tournament, which we will discuss later in the program. The upcoming break sort of acted as a pseudo-trade deadline. The actual trade deadline is roughly a month away. But, Willie, I was reading The Athletic yesterday, and there was an article about perfect fits for player and team at the trade deadline. And I've seen Ryan O'Reilly connected to the Toronto Maple Leafs in multiple places now. Obviously, he was there as a rental before he joined the Predators in free agency. He has a history with Maple Leafs coach Craig Berube. They won the Stanley Cup together a few years ago. And this was the mock trade proposal in The Athletic between the Maple Leafs and the Predators. The Maple Leafs acquire Ryan O'Reilly. The Predators acquire Fraser Minton, Nick Robertson, and a 2027 fourth-round pick. Fraser Minton is 20 years old. He's a center. He is ranked by The Athletic as the Maple Leafs' second-best prospect, although the Maple Leafs are ranked 28th in the 2025 NHL prospect pool rankings by The Athletic. So Minton is considered one of their best prospects. However, their prospect pool is not one of the best in the league, so keep that in mind. But I'm curious for your opinion on this specific trade proposal, as well as if maybe are they in the ballpark on what the Predators could expect in a Ryan O'Reilly trade, which would be a young top center prospect. Nick Robertson is a young player as well. He's the younger brother of Jason Robertson, the Stars star forward, but he's been in and out of the NHL. He hasn't been able to stick in the league for any significant length of time, and a 2027 fourth round pick. At first glance, I don't know if this is enough, but I'd be curious for your opinion on this trade proposal.
I wouldn't be interested in that package at all. Philosophically, because the Predators have so many draft picks stocked up over the next few years, I think you would have Barry Trotz's ear with some developed prospects that are closer to making their mark in the NHL. The double-edged sword about that is you start to have a picture of what that player is. From what I've read about Fraser Minton, and I'm going by that Athletic, he's the number two prospect in a very shallow prospect pool.
Yes.
And he does not appear, even though he's a center, which is what Barry Trotz wants to find over the next few years, is really good centers that you can win with. Those are hard pieces to find. Those are pieces, quite honestly, that the Predators, over the history of their franchise, haven't had a lot of winning centers. Minton doesn't look like he's got a huge ceiling based on the scouting reports that are not my scouting reports. I admit I don't know much about him. But in the Athletic, they're saying serviceable third-line center, maybe a good fourth-line center. That's not what Barry Trotz is looking for. If they had to trade Ryan O'Reilly and he was going to be a free agent at the end of the year, then this is what you're looking at. It's what's the best offer that you can get. They have Ryan O'Reilly for the next 2 years. They love Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly wants to be here. And so that is not a knock your socks off. That's the word that Barry Trotz said he wants if he's going to even entertain a trade for Ryan O'Reilly. That doesn't come close to knocking my socks off. That doesn't even knock off a shoelace. It doesn't untie my shoe. Nick Robertson is not Jason Robertson. He's a spare part. That I love how the Toronto media says, oh, he could be a 20-goal scorer. Well, maybe, but he's no different than a Phil Tomasino or some guys that the Predators have trying to look. They need something more if they're going to give up a surefire winning player whose value goes beyond what he does on the ice for you in Ryan O'Reilly. It's a special player.
I think Philip Tomasino is a good comparison for Nick Robertson, but this is what The Athletic writes about Fraser Minton. Quote, Minton is Toronto's second best prospect and could develop into an intelligent, defensive-minded third-line center. He's 20 and close to being NHL-ready based on his solid AHL play and the cup of coffee he got earlier this season with the big club. As for Nick Robertson, if it was Jason Robertson, done deal. But yeah, it's not. It's Nick Robertson.
You hang up the phone before they have a chance to say no.
The article writes, Robertson has fallen out of favor in Toronto, but could break out with a bigger opportunity elsewhere. He scored 14 goals and 27 points in 56 games with the Leafs last season, despite averaging just 11.23 per game. The 23-year-old left winger could develop into a 20-goal scorer. Finally, we added a fourth-round pick as a third piece to sweeten the pot. It's possible the Preds might want more than this, but at the very least, this seems like a reasonable starting point. But I think the Nick Robertson, Philip Tomasino comparison is sound. I think for those who are unfamiliar with Nick Robertson, think of Philip Tomasino's career with the Nashville Predators. That's basically what Nick Robertson's career with the Maple Leafs has been.
Right. There's a lot of players. And look, I really like Phil Tomasino, the person. I hope he succeeds. But I think it's likely now that he's closer to a finished product. That's when you get into that 23-year-old range, you're closer to what you're going to be. And I think Tomasino and Robertson, and I haven't watched Robertson as closely, they can flash and have really good games. Obviously, Tomasino just scored against the Predators, but if you look at his numbers since he's been there, he's been pretty close to what he was with Nashville. He has some good games. He's got some talent. He's got some high-end tools, and he's got some weaknesses. So where does that put you? It doesn't look like it's a consistent winner that is the type of player you would try to get in exchange for a Ryan O'Reilly. If I can get a young player who I think is a real fit on a team that kind of needs to get younger, then I'm interested. But I still think O'Reilly is so valuable, and it's not like you have to trade him. It's like when you go to the car lot and you really like your car, it's got some miles on it, but you're like, this has been really reliable for me. I want a good deal. I want a deal that I'm really excited about. If I'm not excited, I walk off the lot. That's a better position to be in. And we would compare it to a guy like Mikael Granlund. That was a big deal. And you and I have talked a lot about the comparisons between Granlund and O'Reilly and who's more valuable. What do they bring to the table? Remember that Granlund is a free agent at the end of the year. That changes what you're able to do when you're the team that's the seller.
Speaking of Mikael Granlund, he was traded over the weekend with Cody Ceci, the veteran defenseman, from San Jose to Dallas. San Jose received a first-round pick in the 2025 draft and a conditional third-round pick in the 2025 draft. It's a fourth-round pick that could upgrade to a third-round pick if the Stars qualify for the Stanley Cup final. So that seems more like a true rental-type deal. When I look at that mock trade from The Athletic, Fraser Minton, Nick Robertson, and a fourth-round pick for Ryan O'Reilly, who has 2 years left on his contract at a manageable cap hit, and we'll talk about the cap later in the show, that's a big fat no for me. I would need more. I agree with your car lot metaphor. I don't need to get rid of Ryan O'Reilly. He's not an unrestricted free agent who I feel is going to leave if I don't trade him. So to me, I'm to quote, was it Randy Jackson from American Idol? That's a no from me, dog, when it comes to that.
You sounded just like Randy when
yes,
you did
I sounded just like Randy, just like you sounded kind of like you in that clip we played earlier
right, with David Lebron
in the show. But I'm wondering what the Granlund deal, I wonder if that sets the center market at the trade deadline. Considering O'Reilly's under contract for a couple more years at a manageable cap hit, I'm wondering how that can all sort of blend together.
Yes, and I think Barry Trotz has been pretty clear that he really is not looking to trade Ryan O'Reilly. However, with Granlund off of the board, I can't think of a more valuable center for a winning team, a team trying to win a cup this year, than Ryan O'Reilly, or trying to win a cup not just this year, but you have the luxury of three playoff runs with Ryan O'Reilly if you trade for him. So that, to me, makes O'Reilly much more valuable. I'm not sure if I'm the Sharks. That's a good deal. Now, I don't know what the contract talks were. Maybe Mikhail Granlund said, I'm not interested in signing. Or maybe there's a side. You know, I heard when we were in San Jose that there was interest from the Sharks that, hey, maybe deal him and then try to sign him back in the summer. But that's always a risky proposition because Granlund, to his credit, has really revived his career with the Sharks. He's played outstanding hockey.
I was impressed by how well he played there despite the team around him.
Yes, and it's not just how he played against Nashville, which was really good, but really the whole year he's been a great piece.
I believe he was their leading scorer at the time of the deal.
He is, and I also think that the Sharks need, kind of like Barry Trotz philosophized last year, young players, if you're just out there swimming by yourselves, swimming with the Sharks, you're going to get buried. Like, you know, we looked at the Sharks, the Ducks, the Senators, the Red Wings, and the Sabres, right? Consistently over the last 6, 7, 8 years, picking in the top 10. They've got some unbelievably talented players, but none of those teams have won yet. Now, maybe the Senators and Red Wings are on the verge of something here. They're on the borderline. They were last year, and neither of them got in. But it takes a long time if you don't have support. And the Sharks, I see a team that needs support. There's an argument to keep. So it's going to be a low first-round pick, what they got from the Stars, and a fourth or a third. Is that really going to move the needle? Or would you have been better off just reinvesting heavily in Granlund to keep him around? I think that's a fair question.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, the Four Nations Face-Off Tournament is a week away. Can't wait for it. We'll discuss it. Coming up next, Adam Vingan in with Willie Dunnick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined by Willie Dunnick. This week, the Predators are back in action on Friday in Chicago against the Blackhawks. Of course, you can hear that game right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. But Willie, we are a week away from the Four Nations Face-Off Tournament. It starts next Wednesday. Four teams: the United States, Canada, Finland, and Sweden. The games will be played in Montreal at the Bell Center and in Boston at the TD Garden. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the format of this tournament, each team will play three games in a traditional round-robin format under the following point system: 3 points for a regulation win, 2 points for an overtime or shootout win, 1 point for a loss in overtime or a shootout, and 0 points for a loss in regulation time. The two teams with the best tournament record will then advance to a one-game final. So each team guaranteed to play three games. The top two teams will then play in the final. There are three Predators representatives. Philip Forsberg and Gus Nyquist will play for Team Sweden. UC Saros expected to be the starting goaltender for Team Finland. This is the first best-on-best tournament with NHL players, Willie, if I'm not mistaken, since the 2016 World Cup of Hockey. So it's been nearly 10 years since we've seen best-on-best hockey with the stars of the NHL. A lot of the young stars in the NHL have never had an opportunity to play best-on-best in this situation. I'm really excited to see the games in this tournament.
I am as well. I am curious what kind of action it draws from the league, having it in the middle of the season as opposed to at the beginning of the season. I think during the calendar, it falls in a pretty intriguing spot. I think, you know, you're post-Super Bowl, or will be post-Super Bowl, and you're not to March Madness yet. So I think you probably have a decent window if you can get interest. But this is so new that I'm curious about it. But I think the hockey fans are very curious about it. I think with one caveat, you're holding your breath if your team is in contention for something and you don't want to see somebody get hurt. And somebody will, right? It's just in that many games involving the best players, there's going to be at least one person that probably gets an injury that's going to affect his regular season down the stretch. But that aside, I think the players want this. I think they're going to play to win. This is not going to be some walk in the park. They're going to go after this thing because there's bragging rights. And like you said, it's been a long time since you've seen the absolute best players in the world for those four countries go head-to-head.
Right. You hit the nail on the head when it comes to the effort that I'm expecting in this tournament. I'm expecting top-level effort. This is not going to be an all-star game where they're half-assing it out
right,
there.
Right, right.
We're expecting the best of the best. And I've been looking at some projected lineups for some of these teams. Get a load of this projected top line for Team Canada, according to the NHL. Sidney Crosby on the wing, Connor McDavid at center, Nathan MacKinnon at right wing. Crosby, McDavid, MacKinnon as your first line. I saw this projected lineup for the United States. You've got Austin Matthews and Jack Eichel down the middle as your first and second line centers. This projection has JT Miller and Matthew Tkachuk playing with Austin Matthews. Kyle Connor and Brady Tkachuk playing with Jack Eichel. Jack Hughes as your third line center. It's incredible the talent of these teams. In terms of Team Sweden, because the Predators have two representatives on Team Sweden, this projection from NHL.com has Philip Forsberg playing at left wing on the second line with Elias Pettersson of the Canucks and Lucas Raymond of the Red Wings, who's been on an absolute tear since the Red Wings made a coaching change. Gus Nyquist expected, by the way, to be the extra forward for Team Sweden. So not sure if we'll see Gus Nyquist actually play in this tournament. But Team Sweden has a couple former Predators players on it. Victor Arvidsson on the team. Mattias Ekholm on the team. So, I think that Team Canada or Team USA, one of those two teams is probably going to be the favorite in this tournament.
I saw the other night, just because our game with our broadcast was right next to the national broadcast, which is Amazon. It's the equivalent of Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit / Monday Night Football in Canada, right? Amazon
yes.
Prime puts it exclusively on the stream. And they did a lot of talking about the favorite for the Four Nations face-off. And it was pretty clearly, in the odds maker's mind, Team USA is the favorite. And
I would say the separation for that is they have unquestionably the best goalie
in the tournament. No question.
Connor Hellebuyck, starting goalie for Team USA.
And the biggest question mark for Canada is who's going to be their goalie?
That's a good question. Their three goalies do not inspire a ton of confidence. The three goalies on their roster, Aiden Hill of the Vegas Golden Knights, Jordan Binnington of the St. Louis Blues, and Sam Montembeau of the Montreal Canadiens. The biggest snub, I think, of any player in this tournament, Logan Thompson, who's having an incredible season with the Capitals in net, did not make the team. If Team Canada could have a do-over, I think they would find a way to get Logan Thompson on the team.
They probably selected those guys before Logan Thompson continued his, because Logan Thompson was playing basically every other game. And then as it's gone on, he just keeps lighting it up. And I agree with you. I think if they could just choose the team right before, I think it would be a lot different choice. But that is going to be the fascinating part is this. You get all these players showing up. You might have two practices with them. Some of the players have played together before on international teams in the past. But as we've said, the best players whose teams get to the playoffs every year, they haven't played internationally in a long time. So who can blend? What does the coach try to do? You mentioned a guy like Nyquist. Nyquist is a great spare part when he's surrounded by elite talent, which this team will have on Team Sweden. So when you say he's expected to be the odd man out, well, you need somebody to be a penalty killer. You need somebody to do specific things or be able to go into any one spot. It's not as simple as let's take the 12 most skilled, talented players and put them out there. That to me is going to be a big dynamic in this tournament. It may not be the guy that you think it is that ends up being the hero, if you will.
For Team Sweden, Jacob Markstrom was supposed to be their starting goalie, the Devils' starting goalie, but he suffered an injury, so he's out of the tournament. Filip Gustavsson of the Minnesota Wild, I believe, is expected to be the starter in Markstrom's place. They also have Linus Ullmark on the team, so one of them, and Ullmark, I believe, just came back from injury. So one of them could be the starting goalie. And, of course, Saros is expected to be the starter for Finland. But
and Lankinen is on the team, and is there one more, or is it just two?
There is one more, but I can't recall who it is off the top of
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen.
Okay.
Oh, that's right.
From the Buffalo Sabres. Thank you, Keezer. So I the part of this tournament that excites me, as I said, Willie, is, and by the way, the other goalies for Team USA, ho-hum, Jake Oettinger and Jeremy Swayman. Team USA clearly has the advantage in net, which is why it makes sense that they are the betting favorite in this tournament. But there are a lot of young players. I'm looking at Team USA specifically. There are a lot of young or younger players who are going to have an opportunity to represent their country in this situation that they haven't been able to before. Like I think of Jack Hughes, for example, and Quinn Hughes as well, his brother, the Canucks defenseman. Like, anytime bragging rights are on the line, you know, this is why Olympic sports always, it always captivates me. Anytime bragging rights, international bragging rights are on the line, I wouldn't say I'm like the world's most patriotic person, but when Team USA is in action, you might as well drape me in the American flag.
And I'm curious how casual fans, if they jump on that, because if you've been paying attention at all, and you know, this is where the casual fan probably isn't, but if you look at the World Juniors, Team USA has built in the last 10-15 years some really good talent that has come up through. It is not like it was a couple generations ago where the sport really wasn't thriving. There weren't as many people playing. There weren't as many elite athletes choosing to play hockey. I do think that that's changing. And it has definitely gotten the attention of Canada and everybody else around the world. And you know, there's that group with Patrick Kane. There's some really good players. But this is a group for the USA with Matthews and the Hughes brothers that we haven't really seen play.
The Kachucks.
Yeah, we haven't seen them play together with the USA jersey on.
Yes.
You got to go back to the Sochi Olympics. That was still Patrick Kane and TJ Oshie and guys like really good team.
Yes.
This team, I think, is way more talented top to bottom than that team.
So if you're looking at the Predators' schedule and you're wondering why they're off for 2 weeks in the middle of February, this is why. The Four Nations Face-Off Tournament starts a week from tonight. I'm looking forward to it. The Predators have two more games. They play Friday, Saturday, Friday at Chicago, Saturday in Buffalo, and then they're off until Saturday the 22nd. So two full weeks off for the Predators. If you're wondering why there's just a big gap in the schedule in February, this is why. But you will be treated to some excellent international hockey. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we got some news about the salary cap that's going to lead to some interesting conversations about how teams might be able to separate themselves. We'll discuss that next. Adam Vingan with Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan in with Willie Donick today or tonight. Either way, it's Wednesday. The Predators are back in action on Friday in Chicago. First half of a back-to-back. They're home against the Buffalo Sabres on Saturday before 2 weeks off for the Four Nations Face-Off Tournament. They resume play Saturday, February 22nd against the Colorado Avalanche at Bridgestone Arena. But, Willie, we received some news earlier this week about the salary cap, or it might have been late last week, about the NHL salary cap, and it's going to go up quite a bit. Next season, the salary cap is expected to be the upper limit of the salary cap is expected to be $95.5 million, which is an increase of $7.5 million over this season. It's expected to go up to $104 million to start the 2026 season and $113.5 million to start the 2027-2028 season. So the salary cap going up way up. But it's going to lead to an interesting conversation, and Pierre LeBrun at The Athletic had a story about this, about the skyrocketing NHL salary cap and how could it lead, and could it lead, I should say, to a new era of haves and have-nots. And this is the question that I think smaller market teams might be asking themselves. Teams have always had internal budgets, and not all teams spend to the cap. The Predators have been a cap team in recent years. But now that the ceiling is rising so rapidly, could we return to the days where the bigger markets have a significant advantage, where they have more money to spend? Now, the other question I have is, the Predators and other teams will still have the no state income tax advantage, but will that advantage be less crucial now that teams have more money to spend? I think it's going to lead to a fascinating conversation about the parity in the league now that the salary cap is going to explode.
It will. I've thought about this a lot, and the league is doing well. This is one of the reasons why it's going up so fast, and the league had to make adjustments just like every organization did during COVID, and that is also where you're seeing a correction. Now, these are the reasons why it's going up. So a quick history lesson of the Predators. If you go way back when they were a very small market expansion team, their payroll was minuscule. This is before there was a salary cap. Then after the first lockout that wiped out an entire season because the owners said, look, we've got to have a salary cap to make this work. We can't have six teams that have a payroll that just dwarfs 15 or 20 other teams. That's just not how a good league should operate. So then the salary cap came in, and Nashville for a long time was more of a middle-class team, I would say, right? There was a revenue-sharing system where the bigger markets pool money and the smaller markets get some revenue sharing money to help them. But to do that, even after that, Nashville was not in a position to be a team that could get to the ceiling of the salary cap. They were much more around the midpoint. And I think a lot of our fans here in this town would be surprised to know that that was the case for a good while. But the ownership group that is together now has worked very hard and gotten very creative, sold a lot of tickets. They've won a lot of games. They've got great, deeper fan support. And I haven't given it a thought in a long time. I've never thought, hey, I'm not sure they can afford this player or they can afford to get to a salary cap ceiling. That's been sort of a no-brainer for, what would you say, 7, 8, 9 years now, at least, where they've routinely, if they wanted to, they could spend right to the cap. Now, this new tier does have you wonder, with Nashville still not being it, they're never going to be confused with New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or Toronto. Can they continue to get to the salary cap ceiling if they want to? I'm not sure, but I know that with the leadership of Bill Haslam, who I think, it's fair to say, has deeper pockets than some of the previous owners, definitely of Craig Leopold at the time, I think he adds the ability to strengthen, I think, what they can do with that down the road. And I think they're always thinking about how do you find ways to generate more revenue to do that. I think the Predators will be very competitive, but I do think there will be something to watch for. And here's a team that comes to mind for me, Adam, is Winnipeg, right? And really all the Canadian teams, but particularly Winnipeg, who's the smallest market in Canada, in the Predators division. I think that's the team in particular that I would circle and say, this is a team that really will have challenges with the salary cap going up so high so quick.
I'm no accountant, but I do think that the no state income tax will still play a role in this. Now, the Predators may not be able to offer as much money as a big market team, but you get more bang for your buck if you play in Nashville than if you play in New York. I am curious, though, as I said before, if that advantage is not as big now that teams can just, you know, theoretically pay more money. And you're not, you know, I mean, you guess you still take home a significant amount. Again, I'm no accountant. I pay somebody to help me with my taxes.
I'm not that worried about it, Adam, because I think it's still it's still designed, and maybe they'd have to tweak it, but it will still, as long as it's still designed, that smart allocation of resources and everybody is at least in the same ballpark for what they have to spend, then I think it's a fair competition. It was clearly just not fair. And you can remember, I'm sure, as a young baseball fan, before they even had anything that dragged salaries, the difference between the Yankees and the Dodgers payroll and everybody else, it's almost reestablishing itself in baseball now is a little bit more of a factor. But at least small market teams have found out how they can thrive with the revenue sharing that is involved in baseball. There used to be not nearly as much revenue sharing, and you were really at a disadvantage. You just want a system that can be competitive, and each market feels like they have a chance to win.
The Predators are back in action on Friday against the Blackhawks on the road. They're home on Saturday against the Sabres, the final two games before the Four Nations face-off break. Willie, what are you hoping to see from the Predators in these final two games before they're off for a couple of weeks?
I would just like to see them get back to playing the type of hockey that they were playing before the last two games. And that's a whole different kind of pain when you play some games. And I will give you two examples. Recently, the game against Vancouver here, where I thought they badly outplayed the Canucks and scored one goal. There's been 10 games like that this year. And Buffalo, where they did score some goals, but they made some big gaffes at the wrong time and shot themselves in the foot, didn't take advantage of a double minor high stick, things like that. So there's those two examples are games that they should win. And when you play Chicago and Buffalo, if you play the way they're capable of playing, you should have a really good chance of beating both of those teams. That's what I would like to see. But this is what this is the dilemma, right? Now that you are where you are in the standings, I think there's probably an increasing amount of fans going, I'm intrigued by the idea of them having a top five pick, which doesn't really happen. The last time they did, they got Seth Jones. They traded for Philip Forsberg, and they had a really quick turnaround.
For Ryan Johansson. Traded Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson, but also had Philip Forsberg.
No, I'm talking about 2013.
Oh, okay.
Where they cratered.
Okay.
Right? They had a bad year.
That's right.
They had been a winning team.
Got our signals crossed there for a minute.
Right. So let's give you another history lesson. 2010, 2011, 2012. Three playoff teams centered by Pekka Rinne, Ryan Suter, Shea Weber. Shea Weber, they won playoff series for the first time in their history, right? They had a really solid team. Ryan Suter leaves for free agency. Pekka Rinne gets hurt. A bunch of other guys get hurt, and they crater in a shortened 2013 season. But what did they do? They became sellers. They got the fourth pick in the draft, which was Seth Jones, who they turned into Ryan Johansson. And Martin Erat, a staple player who was disheartened, wanted to leave, he gets traded to Washington for Philip Forsberg, and suddenly you have a sort of a turbo-boosted rebuild that didn't take very long. It took 2 years, and they were right back. They had some good players in the system like Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm, and you look up 2 years later, and they're right back in contention. I think that's a little bit of what could happen here if they still don't go on a hot streak and end up finishing 10th in the West or something like that. If they can hover, have some success, feel good about their formula, but also end up with a top five pick, I think you would take that.
For a moment there, I thought you said they traded Seth Jones for Philip Forsberg, but this is why I shouldn't correct you. You are the seasoned, grizzled broadcaster, as we heard at the beginning of the show. The fact that you've been doing this for such a long time, you didn't even sound like yourself nearly 30 years ago when you interviewed David Legwand. That's on me for stepping on your toes. Willie Donick, always a pleasure to talk hockey with you, my friend. We'll do some more of it on our show. You can hear us every weekday from 11 to 2 on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick with our good friend, Tennessee Sports Hall of Famer, Derek Mason. But that will do it for us tonight on Preds Insiders. Thank you to Willie. Thank you to Nick Kieser. This is Adam Vingan signing off 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America. discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to chumbacasino.com.
Chumbacasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit chumbacasino.com.